Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
And our promise for the next 10 years is to continue to have the best relationship with our fans of any sport in the world, any professional sports team in the world. And that starts with the Marquee Network. The Marquee Network. What do you have against the Marquee Network? Believe me, you won't be booing about that in a year. You guys won't, you won't be booing about the Marquee Network in 1 year.
Middays on the Score.
Oh boy, you talk about an iconic convention moment that we will always remember. The top of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join the Wildcats at Welsh Ryan Arena this Sunday when they host Ohio State. Tip-off is set for 5:30 p.m. Buy tickets now at nusports.com. Patrick Mooney covers the Cubs. He is on Twitter at PJ_Mooney. He is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. That was awkward, Patrick, especially the juxtaposition, the irony of the juxtaposition of we are going to have the best relationship with fans of any team in professional sports, and then to clearly not understand all that's being booed, all that is being represented by the distaste for the Marquee Network. It's just incredible to me to say you have that relationship and then clearly not currently have that relationship.
Yeah, Dan, I think you nailed it. That was the moment from Cubs convention over the weekend. And just only hearing the audio, you can kind of hear like the booing like even more. Like it really kind of trains your ears to just hear the reaction from what is the Cubs, you know, hardcore customer base. I mean, these are the people who travel through the snow and in the freezing cold temperatures in the middle of winter to, you know, they spend their time, their money, their passion. And, you know, if they're booing Marquee, and if they're not spending money on free agents, and if they are coming off, you know, two really disappointing Septembers, you just wonder what the rest of Chicago thinks and how enthusiastic they're going to be this season.
Just looking at the entire winter of inaction and trying to find some action in it, I understand that they've got this grievance that Chris Bryant has filed that they've got to resolve. I just wonder if they have plans for either way. Are they laying out some sort of flowchart of decision-making processes that then trigger once a decision is reached on Bryant, or are they happy with what they haven't done?
Well, I think their jobs have turned into, you know, 24/7, 365 days a year type deals. And, you know, you can come up with all the flowcharts you want, but clearly options have come off the board. I think there's been more than $2 billion spent in free agency. Teams have certainly moved in other directions. We've had the Nolan Arenado drama in Colorado, which has been fun to watch from afar. I guess at least the Cubs and Chris Bryant haven't devolved into that, and I don't think they will. But certainly, I think if you look at the entire picture, it definitely seems more likely now that Chris will be showing up in Mesa for spring training that was at the end of the season when, you know, Theo clearly was frustrated and was signaling to the entire world that he'd be open for business. And, you know, like a lot of things in life, it might just come down to timing. And I don't think it's really on the Cubs side right now.
When you listed a lot of the things that I think were being booed there, and, you know, we can go on and on with so much of it. I think the hiring of David Ross, when we look at these mm-hmm. marking points for change for where this team is, obviously a managerial change is one of them. Yet David Ross is sort of grandfathered in. I think he's kind of bulletproof. Nobody's going to take out their anger on Ross as a symbol of where the Cubs are. The Marquee Network is almost a perfect storm of things, because it means fans spending more money, because it does mean change, because of Sinclair ownership. I'm wondering, do you think that there is, after all that the Ricketts family has been through, when they bought the team on this sort of tide of fandom of something other than Tribune ownership, do you think that everything else that's been involved, whether it's been the Scott Walker fundraisers, the right wing stuff, and really the Joe Ricketts emails, just how nasty and racist and anti-Muslim some of that, has there been an effect, or have they successfully inoculated against that effect?
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot to unpack there. I mean, I will say David Ross did get, I think, two standing ovations, and I think what might really alarm the Ricketts is that there wasn't a whole lot of cheering. And outside of that marquee, awkward booing, there wasn't a lot of anger either. And I think if you're a business, that might even be the worst place to be, that you know, these are the people who care about the Cubs more than anyone else, probably in the city or in the country. And there was a lot of kind of, I don't know if apathy is the right word, there just wasn't a ton of buzz. And, you know, I don't think it was any one thing. I think, you know, Markey has hired, you know, people who've launched networks before. I think by and large, you know, it's a really talented group of big name analysts, but you're right. It's a really weird spot to be in, you know, only a couple of years after winning the World Series, to have this kind of apathy in certain corners, you know, anger directed at ownership. I think, at the end of the day, their investment is now worth more than $3 billion, and that's how they're going to be keeping score, and that's how they feel like they're going to be judged on. And I think that's the thing about the Cubs. Like, are they too big to fail? Like, what would happen to where fans would turn off? And I don't think we're at that point yet. I mean, they made it through more than a century of losing to this point, but you're right. These are the kind of like pressure points that we'll be watching for all season.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking, you know, other than had the booing not happened for Marquee Network and all of the other things that are kind of wrapped up in that booing, probably some of the most damning stuff that would have come from Cubs convention was Anthony Rizzo talking about the situation that the team is actually in, the 26 men on the roster. The idea that we're looking at trading Chris Bryant, the idea that the extension talks between Rizzo and the front office have kind of shut down. That kind of got pushed to back burner stuff when in other towns that would be, I mean, that's kind of front page. That's kind of conversation about how a face of the team is unhappy with the direction we're going. It's much more Arenado than it is, you know, Marquee Network conversation.
Well, to me, I feel like, you know, Rizzo got his extension. You know, I mean, he made his decisions, and I think when you look at the totality of it, he was someone who was a cancer survivor who had been traded a bunch of times, who had familiarity with the front office, and knew Chicago was a great place to, you know, become an all-star, a gold glove winner, a World Series champion. So to me, I get why people are interested in. I just never went into this offseason thinking like Rizzo was any sort of priority for them to extend, knowing that he is, you know, a couple years older than Javi, that he is, there is certainty to where he will kind of be over the next couple of years. And, you know, the Javi extension is still kind of something that is out there. I mean, Javi said we'll be ready for it if they, you know, kind of come. And Theo has kind of alluded broadly, saying we kind of know where we stand with certain guys and move the ball forward at least a little bit. And so I think by the time they get to spring training, I'm wondering if, you know, Rizzo looks across the room and sees Chris Bryant there and maybe kind of exhales, and David Ross kind of brings them together with kind of like an us versus them mentality. And there's no doubt they're going to be under pressure to get off to a good start, because if we see kind of what we saw at the end of the last two seasons, I mean, there's no doubt that Theo is going to be selling at the trade deadline and trying to do what the Yankees did in 2016 and do kind of a quick reload, retool, you know, whatever you want to call it.
As of right now, do you have Nico Hoerner as the starting second baseman and Ian Happ as the starting center fielder?
Yeah, I would think that we'd have to look at it in terms of, not that they're necessarily going to be every day, but I do think that right now Ian Happ is a huge part of this team. I mean, that was kind of the guy Theo went to when a fan at Cubs convention had an awesome question. He did the went up to the microphone and said, thank you for the 2016 World Series, but... And he kind of just brought this idea of the definition of insanity, of bringing this group back together and expecting a different result. And Happ was the guy that Theo pointed to. And I guess there are reasons to think that, you know, maybe he did turn a corner last year and learned a lot of different things. And those two guys in particular, I think Ross has made a real concerted effort to sit down with R&D and kind of brainstorm. And, you know, he's brought a lot to the table from his experiences. They've kind of reshaped the coaching staff to help Ross decipher all this information and kind of, you know, what it means and, you know, which buckets to kind of look at. And I do think there's going to be a kind of a collaborative effort to probably do what Joe Maddon did of mixing and matching, and it'll probably enrage, you know, certain fans on Twitter. But yeah, no doubt those are two guys that if things come together somehow this year, I think those are two guys where they take steps forward that maybe, you know, people aren't counting on right now.
You mentioned the pressure that David Ross and his team are going to be under to perform and perform quickly in this season. Do you, I mean, if they don't, and the Cubs are, you know, a middling team or, you know, somewhat falling out of the NL Central or out of a wild card race with the Reds kind of resurgent and whatnot, will it then finally be everything is on the table for this team? I mean, with you mentioned the kind of on-the-fly retool that the Yankees went through in 16. I wonder if it could be more than that.
Yeah, I think everything's on the table right now. I just think in terms of maybe the market forces of other teams feeling a little more desperate or a little more realistic, kind of knowing what they need. You know, we're talking about a team like the Braves or the Dodgers, teams that are, you know, great on paper, that should have some flexibility, that will be looking for elite difference-making players, not just kind of stacking more depth onto their roster to withstand injuries. It'll be, no, if they want guys that make a difference in October, I think you're talking about just about everyone other than Javi. Darvish is someone that they've kind of dismissed the idea of trading him. That was pretty early in the offseason, because you look at their rotation, it's basically him and Hendricks and like three question marks. So yeah, I don't think there's going to be any room for sentiment come July if the Cubs are clearly out of it, or if they're kind of hanging around. I think that would also be a way for them to maybe get some of their finances in order if this luxury tax issue is still looming into the season.
Do you have any idea how, once spring training convenes, how it's going to be different under the auspices of Justin Stone and Craig Breslow, and how newly empowered they are to be looking at guys in new and different ways? What are we going to see different in this administration with all of these new modalities applied?
Yeah, I think that's already started in terms of them reaching out to pitchers, putting them on throwing programs, kind of you know, when they're throwing, what they're throwing, what they're focusing on. And yeah, there's no doubt that those two guys, I guess Breslow is, you know, a relatively big name because he, you know, pitched for a World Series winner, pitched a long time in the big leagues. But, you know, those guys, you know, had kind of audited the team in recent years, whether it was in a consultant capacity, which Stone was, or Breslow as this, you know, Ivy League, former big league pitcher that CU brought in to kind of see how the Cubs were doing things. And, you know, I'm not sure how much we'll be able to see, because some of that will be behind, a lot of be behind closed doors with a big sign that says no media. Mm-hmm. But my colleague at the Athletic, Sadiq Sharma, had written about, you know, the pitch lab, and that's pretty much every guy that they've brought in, you know, even if we've never heard of them before. You can look at their baseball reference page, and they've had maybe one good season or maybe one statistic that tells you where they could be, or there's this underlying data about a certain pitch that suggests, you know, if we try this, maybe he could be that. That's really how they're kind of building out this bullpen here, which is a huge area of risk. But if they are going to surprise this year, it'll probably be a couple more, the Wicks, you know, Roland Wick, Brad Wick, Kyle Ryan, guys that we're not really focusing on, but if they, if kind of one little thing clicks for them in that pitch lab, that's kind of what they're hoping for. It's not what fans want to hear in the middle of winter. It's really hard to cling to like technology when the Reds are getting, you know, a ton of players, but that's kind of where the Cubs are at in 2020.
Yeah, we're talking about technology, and we're talking about the supporting staff for David Ross. I had read that Will Venable was interested, or the Astros, rather, were interested in Will Venable as potentially a replacement for A.J. Hinch in Houston. Do you expect those talks to continue? Where is that at, and how important was he? Is he going to be to David Ross? That whole coaching staff is going to be to David Ross.
Yeah, I mean, the Cubs think Will Venable is a future manager, and certainly he fits the profile of what teams are looking for. He's a Princeton guy. He played a long time in the big leagues, has a really good personality and a way around players. I just think I have a hard time believing that his first chance is going to be taking over that toxic situation in Houston. If I were running that team, I would want a more experienced hand, and I have a hard time thinking that that's probably the best situation for Will Venable. But no doubt, I mean, Ross had never really hired or fired anyone before, and I think it was an eye-opening process for him of, you know, calling references and kind of being exposed to some of these new ideas that have even crept in since he's retired. And they brought in some, you know, progressive coaches who had been on Gabe Kapler's staff in Philadelphia, which is an experiment that didn't work. But I think that the Cubs, if you look at really from the time Dale Swain was hired, they had been pretty thoughtful and aggressive in terms of these game planning systems that they put together. Even when it was just kind of building up guys to trade, I think there is a little more cohesion there. And that it's not going to all fall on Ross. It's clearly going to have a front office, R&D, coaching staff influence kind of melded together.
Yeah. It'll all be interesting to watch. Patrick Mooney, appreciate it as always.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Patrick Mooney, he and Sahadev Sharma team up to handle the Cubs in a
it's a good
way
one, too.
Really, really strong. Next up, we are going to talk about the still unfolding MLB cheating scandal. When I say still unfolding, it's because of what players are saying.
Oh, man.
Now, advancing this, you know, Chris Archer has been tweeting about it. Marcus Stroman tweeting about it. CeCe Sabathia
Mike Clevenger
tweeting about
wants
it.
Blood.
Yeah, Mike Clevenger is out to throw baseballs at people's heads and their balls and everything because of what has been going on here. The guy who literally wrote the book on the history of baseball cheating and skullduggery, our old friend Eldon Ham, is going to put this all in context and tell us what he thinks about it and what's next. He is next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
I have an emergency call for you on line 5 from a Mr. Ham.
All right, give me Ham on 5. Hold the mail.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Want your youth hockey team to play in front of thousands? Make it happen with the Chicago Wolves Youth Hockey Program presented by Kia. Go to chicagowolves.com/youth hockey to learn more. Eldon Ham, attorney, author, sports law analyst. He's on Twitter, at Eldon Ham. He literally wrote the book on Major League Baseball cheating. It's called Larceny and Old Leather. So who better to bring on to the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Eldon, how are you?
Hey, Dan, I'm doing great. Nice to talk to you again. Connor, how are you? Oh,
wonderful, wonderful.
So this is still going on as we're finding out more and more about what the Houston Astros did, what they've been alleged to do. And for me, the next phase of this is the reaction from other players on social media and how angry they are. And I want to know, in history, as these things have happened and as we've seen the idea of gamesmanship pass into something that is clearly not part of the sport, how has player reaction around the league mattered in the past?
It's really interesting because in the past, the players would wink, they would smile, Pitchers were throwing spitballs. If it was done within the context of the unwritten rules of the game, a little bit vague, but if that's what happened, the players all kind of accepted it, because baseball, going back to the 1870s, has always been a sort of a swashbuckling microcosm of America, capitalism, politics, baseball itself, and all of that. Even with the steroid era, there was consternation, there was concern. You didn't get this immediate outrage, though, because apparently shooting up in the shadows on steroids to make yourself stronger is one thing, but the whole idea of this elaborate conspiracy of stealing and theft of particular at-bats and games and championships has sent players over the edge. That's what seems to be different. C.C. Sabathia is just going off.
Yeah.
He said, you know, we could have had the World Series and these other idiots have it instead. You know, that sort of thing.
Well, I'm fascinated that the players continue to do this in social media, because I was concerned when Rob Manfred and baseball tried to silo this and make it just the Astros and just the Red Sox, when other players were insisting that that's not the case. I wonder if Major League Baseball is not exposing itself to even more potential issues by making it a small thing and then having that proven to be false over and over again, if indeed what these players are claiming to be true is true.
Yeah, just like the PR people tell you, get ahead of the problem. Don't pretend it's not there. Don't hide from it. If it's this sweeping, you're going to have to deal with it sooner or later. And the sooner you deal with it, the better it generally is. I've had a problem with Major League Baseball ever since the steroid era, because it seemed to me that although the players were at fault per se, the league itself allowed it to happen. I don't know if the league caused it, but they allowed it to happen. They looked away. It was a sweeping pandemic over the major leagues, and they pretended to be surprised, just like in the movies, pay no attention, that sort of thing. So if they have kept that attitude and culture ever since, that's where this came from. As somebody accused me of doing the other day of predicting some of this in my old book, Larceny in Old Leather, I don't know if I predicted this specifically, but I did say that if the major leagues keep their eyes closed, bigger things will happen. It will continue, because why not?
One thing that I noted was that the Astros were more likely to get called out on this by somebody like Mike Fiers or eventually someone else, because everybody hates them. Everybody around baseball despises the way they've gone about their business, despises the way they've behaved. We found out in various ways, the Brandon Taubman incident about a toxic office culture there, that ever since people have left that organization, word has gotten around. And I'm thinking, like, back in anything else that you've researched, how much does it matter for a cheater to be liked or disliked when it comes to how quickly a whistle is blown or how long somebody can get away with something?
Well, there definitely is a correlation. You can go back to the Ty Cobb days. He's still an all-time great player, but he was a guy that was very much disliked by the rest of the league. In fact, one of the examples of cheating in my book involves Ty Cobb. Was the 1910 batting title race, which basically got stolen. But the other players around the league hated Cobb so much that Nap LaJoie, who was a second baseman chasing Cobb's batting title, needed to get like 9 hits on the last day of the season. And the other team decided to play off of third base and allow this LaJoie to get hits to left field all day long. He went 8-for-9 in a doubleheader and tied Cobb for the batting title. So that is a very specific example. If you're hated, sooner or later, somebody's going to get you.
The technology, though, steps into a different era, and I wonder if baseball, if you were advising the league, would you have them write in more specific language, knowing that the technology is blowing up in a way that artificial intelligence is just, it's skyrocketing to a point where it gets scary to think about what they're able to do with the computer power that's available?
Yeah, it's kind of a shame, but my instinct is to answer your question with a yes, Although once you go down that path, then you're defining definitions and defining words in definitions and then defining the words that are defined in the definitions to make it more narrow and narrow and narrow. You know, you're trying to legislate against every possible loophole as opposed to just fairness and common sense. And it is an interesting example because sign stealing has always been a part of the game. Never specifically been allowed, but runners on second, if they can see the catcher's signs, they're going to try to interpret it and steal it. But to me, if it happens within the context of the game itself, like pretending to catch a ball when you really trapped it and throwing a spitball once in a while with a little bit of a wink, everybody knows it's happening. Everybody expects it. It's okay. It's kind of part of the game, especially baseball, which has that culture to it, which is kind of unusual. But when you get into these elaborate conspiracies where possibly even management was involved, that's where people seem to draw the line.
I guess the last question I have for you, Eldon, is the psychology of the individual. We heard a lot of after the quote-unquote steroid era of players saying, I didn't want to do it. I felt I had to. I felt this was the new level playing field, that if I had to, if I'm not doing it, somebody else is doing it. He's going to take my job. It's one thing for them to be doing what they're doing. It's another thing for somebody to say, yeah, I guess they're going to tell me what pitch is coming whether I like it or not, and this is just how we do business here. And at no point does somebody say, you know, I don't want to do this, or we shouldn't be doing this. When somebody like Mike Fiers has blown the whistle in the past, has it ever been internal? Has it ever been somebody just saying, like, you know, I don't want this. I don't want to have to do this.
Well, that might have happened occasionally with this one. I know it probably expanded beyond the Astros to a degree. I don't know that it was sweeping through the major leagues entirely, but your example about steroids is a good one, and that's why I blame the major leagues and even the Players Association a little bit, because individual players, and not the stars, forget Barry Bonds for the moment, we all know about that, regular guys, you know, some guys, a second baseman, he hits 12 home runs. 10 other second basemen in the league are suddenly hitting 25. Mm-hmm. He says to himself, I'm going to be out of the league if I don't do something. So, yes, lots of people had to jump on. There's anecdotal evidence that 40 to 50% of the league had experimented with steroids. This particular thing, if they let it go, sooner or later, every team would have to figure out a way to do it because the Astros had an insurmountable, almost, home field advantage. It happened even in 1951, the Ralph Branca and Bobby Thompson, but not as elaborate. And the problem is now that episode has slid into a part of history, almost a sentimental part of history, and so we don't get upset about it. But this here, it will require some thinking about how the rules are defined, and it will require thinking about what harm they did. I mean, forget about the hitters. What about a pitcher? What do you got? A young pitcher. He comes up to the major leagues. He's got good stuff, and they hit him all over the park and just ruin the kid.
Right? How many guys had to be?
That's not fair either.
They visited. Like things were going great for him, and all of a sudden they get destroyed. They start questioning everything they're doing, questioning their sequencing, questioning all of it. How many guys go back to the lab because of what the Astros did to him, and now are just seething about this?
Yeah, there could be several borderline pitchers who maybe never quite made it. You just never know what you're going to do to somebody. If you hang around long enough, maybe the good guys will overcome it. So I don't want to treat everybody like babies, but this is a two-edged sword. For whatever gain the Astros got, or any team like them, it cost somebody else something. That's what CC Sabathia is upset about. Not that his career got hurt, but that maybe he could have got a ring when he didn't, or some young pitcher who we've never heard of and we never will because of this. So that's the problem. That's why the players are speaking up now. They see the other side of the coin.
Eldon, great stuff. Thanks, always, for the expertise.
Always my pleasure, guys.
That is Eldon Ham, attorney, author, sports law analyst. We have some work to do.
Yeah, we got something for you.
We have breaking news.
It has been texted in, tweeted in. It has been brought to our attention that a fart police convention needs to happen.
We're going to go from something with that much dignity to something with far less.
Farts!
I know this is on short notice, but we got to do this. We're going to give away another pair of tickets to see Matchbox 20 when we come back, and we need the fart police to assemble. We have important and solemn work to do. That's next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Give me a number, Connor.
4.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Caller 4 to the contest line, 312-591-6700, wins a pair of tickets to see Matchbox 20 at Hollywood Casino Amphitheater on August 21st. Thanks to Kevin Fishbane, Patrick Mooney, Eldon Ham for joining us, Zawoski Campadiaz, the producers. Tomorrow we'll have, what, Mike Florio?
Yes.
And Hub?
Yes.
Okay, that sounds good to
that's
me.
That's our plan.
We'll have stuff and things, but that's not what matters right now.
No, this is a solemn duty that we perform here.
Also, we should mention radio.com sports NBA expert Rick Bucher.
Oh,
is going to touch base as well. He's really good.
That's
but
fantastic.
Yeah, we've got work to do now.
Yeah, the fart police has been assembled. This was texted in, and we appreciate your work, even when we haven't commissioned the fart police. It was texted in. I grabbed the link. I sent it to Rick. You and I have not heard this.
No, Rick, what do we need to know?
Wendy Williams was doing her show and sitting awkwardly in her chair.
Odell, at 27 years old, you're old enough to understand political correctness in the times that we live now. You can't just slap people on the booty. Of course, he probably knows it's not right from a man to a woman or a woman to a man, but you can't even do that locker room thing. That cop wasn't playing that. I mean, you're lucky you only got battery. What if he filed for sexual assault?
Whoa! That is clear as a bell.
I mean,
that's just letting it fly.
That is,
you need to see the video too, because she was sitting cross-legged, like you tell she was uncomfortable.
Oh,
and then just
that is that's an all-timer.
I mean,
it's so clear it smells in here.
It's not.
That is clear
it's
and evident.
Not quite Alan Nero.
I don't know, man. That's the pause. The pause.
Yeah, not that talent level.
Right. Yeah, there's no question about it.
I mean.
Oh, there's like a two-tone. If you listen, there's a double tone going on there. There's the sound.
You're right.
And then you're it's almost like Tuvan throat singing.
Yes, just like it.
There's something special at work there. That's artistry.
God.
That's sorcery.
That is clear as day. I mean, that vaults to top A number one example.
The video you've got to see, because she is sitting sideways and just looks so uncomfortable as she's talking. It's really clear.
So because she stops talking, and there's a bass
you can
and
see
a treble. That's a multi-channel audio quality.
You can hear her adjust her body.
That's what
on
it is.
The audio.
That's what it is. Like she's
changes the aperture of the release point.
That's being able to control the bat in the strike zone. That's what that is.
Oh.
That is bat
not control.
That's bat control within the strike zone.
Yep. That is pretty.
I mean.
Because there's like there's the two different sounds going on. God, that's great work.
That is, you know, short shift by the fart police here. That is, there's not a whole lot of work you need to do. That
fart.
Is pretty evident.
Boom, that's a fart.
That's a fart. He is clenching. So we're watching the video right now just for the X's and O's of the thing. And it's...
She doesn't look comfortable at all.
No, the entire time. She's still leaning to one side. That's... Oh yeah! Oh, there it is. She froze up too.
Yeah, she
fart.
She locks up completely on that one.
Man.
Yeah, you know what? Sometimes our work is difficult. Sometimes we're going back to the
an easy collar.
The archives and looking for case law and
easy
hitting LexisNexis as need be. But that's not a tough one.
Nope.
Man,
cut and dry. well, maybe not so dry. So dry.
if we're lucky.
Well,
that's
so stupid.
Damn, woman.
Wow. Yeah, that is.
At it. All right. Well, I guess our work here is done.
It is. I feel good.
And that means
solid day.
We'll do transition with Lawrence Holmes in just a moment on The Score.
Vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!